All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman. Today, I am joined by none other than the Falcoholic himself, Dave Choate. We're going to be recapping this Falcons Week 3 preseason loss to the Jacksonville Jaguars.
You are locked on Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman. I've been covering the Falcons for a very long time at falcfans.com. On Twitter, at FalcFans, and of course, the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast. I am joined today by Dave Choate, the Falcoholic, the head honcho over the big tuna, the big cheese, whatever you want to call him. We're going to be talking about last night's, as we're recording this, two nights ago's, as you're listening to this preseason game where the Falcons lost to the Jaguars, once again, falling to 0-3. But we'll get Dave's thoughts and my thoughts on some of the roster battles, sort of the importance of preseason as we constantly need a reminder, particularly after the Falcons flunk another dress rehearsal game. This has been a consistent trend under Dan Quinn, causing the usual annual panic of if the starters are playing, you know, half a game and they stink. What does that mean for the upcoming season? Typically, it doesn't mean much for the upcoming season, but we'll get Dave's thoughts on that as well. So, Dave, welcome back to the show, my friend.
It's great to be back. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, always good talking to you. You're always the voice of reason on this podcast. I always enjoy having you because you, like myself, have been doing this for a very long time. And you have perspective, a very unique perspective that I feel like, you know, I am the only other person on the planet that shares, having to deal with Falcon fans for over a decade. But
it's something.
Yeah, it will definitely change your life in a lot of ways. Let's talk about sort of the preseason game. Obviously, the Falcons did not have several of their key players in this game. So to a certain extent, it's understandable that they did not necessarily play their best game. We once again saw the offense have a little success moving the ball, then sort of ground to a halt, thanks to the unstoppable, relentless pressure that the Jaguars put on them and not necessarily having Julio Jones out there on the field to be able to sort of make the plays that he usually often does make, not having Devontae Freeman to sort of solidify the run game and all those sort of things in the defense. Getting off to a pretty good start, creating some turnovers, getting some stops, but then things sort of dragging out a little bit. And so watching the game, with all that in mind, sort of what were your thoughts on watching the Falcons in this dress rehearsal game?
Well, one thing, you know, after doing this for as long as we have is honestly, this is the first preseason I can remember where I really am having trouble ginning up the enthusiasm to watch this team go through the motions the way that I was able to in years past. I think even 2 years ago when they lost their third preseason game by the exact same score to the Miami Dolphins, you know, there were things that I felt I could get fired up about. And this is just sort of watching a good team go through the process of finding out who the last few guys on the roster are going to be and trying out a few things. And so, you know, it was not an enjoyable game to watch. Certainly when the starters struggle like that, it's not going to be, but I guess my big impression here, the things that maybe stick with me and worry me a little bit going forward were the pass protection, along the offensive line, being sort of a trouble spot against a very good defensive line, and the Falcons are going to play a couple of those. And then really the lack of a pass rush, which has been a fairly consistent thing for the starters in their limited reps throughout preseason. So, you know, those are the things that I think kind of matter and I'm going to take away from this. The rest of it was just kind of semi-interesting for maybe some of the roster battles that are being decided. And then for watching, you know, Calvin Ridley drop a couple balls and go from the golden child to the outcast in the space of a single week.
Okay, that's a good way of putting it with Ridley. Yeah, you know, I think the pass protection was problematic. I think we kind of knew going into this game that generally when you face arguably the best defensive line in the league, even if you have a top five offensive line, as some people would like to say the Falcons do, and they might, generally speaking, a top five D-line versus a top five O-line, the D-line is going to have the significant advantage when we see that. And I think that was the case here. And, yeah, I think, you know, the pass rush, to me, wanted to see a little bit more from them. We saw some flashes from guys, but probably not as much as we probably wanted to. And, you know, we'll see what they do against the Eagles in a couple of weeks, given, you know, the Eagles, you know, assuming Jason Peters is back, because I don't know if you've been watching some of these Eagles games. Vitae has been struggling quite a bit. And I'm just hoping that we get to see another instance of Vitae like we saw in that playoff game, and that's going to be very favorable for Tack McKinley. But my assumption is Jason Peters will be back for week one. But we'll see what the pass rush has for that first game. I'm not too like the thing I always say is I'm always in a constant state of worry about the Falcons pass rush and have been for like 12 years. But in terms of just like in a unique state of worry about the Falcons pass rush, I haven't reached that point yet.
That's a good thing. I feel like you're a good barometer for that.
Yeah. I guess I'm always at DEF CON 2 when it comes to the Falcons pass rush. So you have to worry when we get to DEF CON 1, I guess.
Yeah, no, that's what is that, 2013,
2014? Yeah. Hey, guys, it's crunch time for fantasy, and Locked On is delivering. Locked On has a brand new fantasy show, Locked On Fantasy Football 24/7. Fantasy Football 24/7 will give you the latest trends, the hottest roster moves, and where to get an advantage. Plus, Ethan Turner, the injury expert, is there to give you that extra edge that you need. Locked On Fantasy Football 24/7 is here to help you win your league. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. So, you know, now that we sort of got the sort of typical, you know, preseason, don't put too much stock in it, but put some stock in it, sort of, you know, rigmarole. I guess that's the word you would use there. I don't know. I'm bad at phrases. let's talk about some of the individual performance. You mentioned Calvin Ridley to sort of go from the highs he had against Kansas City to some of the lows he had against Jacksonville. Obviously, the drops were an issue. It wasn't that he wasn't able to get open at times. It was just he was not catching the football, which we know for young receivers, typically those concentration drops. Do you feel like that's more the issue, just, you know, lack of concentration? We've seen that with a number of players here in Atlanta throughout their career. So is this something that concerns you, or is this, you know, just the typical youth hurdles trying to overcome some of these obstacles early on in their career?
Yeah, I think it's probably the latter. You know, I do think that Ridley's history at Alabama suggests that he's going to drop the football sometimes, which means he's going to get roasted for that pretty often. But I think in general, I'm not overly worried that this is going to become some big thing with him. I think it's just, you know, some more time with the jugs machine, a little bit more focus and concentration on making sure you've got the ball. But, you know, it's not something that has me panicking just yet. I think he's such a talent that, you know, we're going to put up with this occasionally, even if he does do it. I think the bigger issue for me is, you know, if Ridley is dropping balls early on as he's sort of acclimating himself and we're getting drops from others, as we saw Friday night, there's just too much potential for some of the frustrating things we saw in 2017 being repeated. So I am hoping that that all gets ironed out nice and early for Ridley and everybody else.
Now, one of the things I complained about on the episode I did yesterday, which was my initial takes on the game, was the lack of reps for Ito Smith. And, you know, all summer long, I've been talking about how this was going to be the summer of Ito and how we were going to see a lot of him, a huge dosage of him, because in all likelihood, he wasn't going to see too many reps during the regular season. And then, you know, yesterday he got some work with the first team, did all right in those opportunities. But have you been somewhat disappointed that we haven't gotten to see a little bit more of Ito Smith? And do you also share this sort of perspective and belief that, you know, if what we see of Ito Smith in terms of the preseason is probably the bulk of what we'll see with him throughout the year of 2018?
Yeah, I think it is. I think, you know, if all goes well for the Falcons, Smith won't be in mothballs. You know, I think he'll pick up a handful of carries here and there. I think he'll be involved some in special teams, but we're not going to see a lot of him. And I think that the frustrating thing has been, you know, you wanted to see more of him this summer, as you said, because he's clearly talented and it would be nice to get a better look at him. But I think the Falcons have determined that, okay, you know, there's some things we're going to work on with him, but we know he's making the roster. We know he's going to be our third guy. We know that unless something goes wrong, we're not really going to need him to play a major role. And it seems like they've just sort of decided that Justin Crawford and maybe this week Malik Williams are going to be the guys they give the reps to. And maybe that's to figure out if they want to keep a fourth running back, if, you know, if they want to have one or the other on the practice squad. I have to think they're leaning Crawford, given how much of a look they've given him. But, you know, it hasn't been particularly exciting to watch any of those guys. So I really would have liked to have seen more of Ito. And I suspect that, you know, his kickoff performance last week against the Chiefs probably helped to put him in mothballs, which is also unfortunate.
Speaking of kickoff performance, the return specialist gig seems like we haven't gotten that much more clarity at that position over the last three games than we had going into the preseason. So where are your thoughts sort of looking at that group of guys? Has anybody sort of stood out in your eyes? We know Ridley had that big return last week. You know, Justin Hardy had a big return that was called back on a penalty on a punt return. We've seen muffed kicks from Ito Smith and Marvin Hall and Isaiah Oliver the other night. And, you know, Reggie Davis had a decent return. You know, it seems like there's just like, I don't know, just it feels like there's just as many question marks now as there were 3 weeks ago. What are your thoughts on the whole return specialist thing?
Yeah, I very much agree with you. You know, it's actually been a little frustrating because I figured there'd be some separation at this point. I feel like, you know, Ito has not helped himself, obviously, in his battle. I don't think Oliver's helped himself for punt return, even though I thought he was sort of a long shot there anyways. And so, you know, my best guess at the moment is that the team's going to go with Ridley as their kickoff returner and Marvin Hall potentially as their punt returner. But it's difficult to know, especially not seeing Hall suit up for this one, you know, where they're leaning and who they're actually thinking about going with. And, you know, I don't expect Ridley to play very much, if at all, in the fourth preseason game. So I think it's going to be difficult if he is one of the guys to get a sense for that. I don't know that anything we see in this fourth preseason game after three games of not really having this thing decided is going to give us any insight. I really think that's going to be the one surprising thing that we find out after roster cuts are made and Dan Quinn starts talking about, you know, who's playing where.
Yeah, I'm definitely curious how it goes. I'm going to play the wait and see game to see if somebody emerges next week against the Dolphins and sort of takes the job. But yeah, right now my best guess is if the season started tomorrow, I think it would probably be Ridley as the kickoff returner and either Hardy or Hull as the punt returner. So we'll see if that changes, if anybody does anything next week to solidify that, or if someone, you know, like a Reggie Davis comes in and sort of, you know, makes a name for himself, who I feel like has the potential to do something at that spot, but we just haven't seen enough of him so far. And maybe next week will be his golden opportunity to sort of unseat somebody else there. Are there any other sort of roster battles that you've been particularly keen on and focused on throughout this preseason?
Yeah, you know, I've been really interested, probably more interested than I have any right to be, in six wide receiver, if they are going to keep that one, and then six cornerback. I'm a fan of Bleedy-Rate. Well, yeah, I always do that. BWW, as I call him.
Buffalo Wild Wings, yes.
I'm a big fan of Buffalo Wild Wings, but he, to me, he's been impressive again this summer. And I know that Justin Bethel is going to be a guy they depend on special teams, but I would hate to lose him, especially with Isaiah Oliver you know, looking a little bit shaky to start his career here. So I'm hopeful that he makes it. He seems to me to be the far and away leading candidate for that spot if they're going to keep one. And then, you know, wide receiver, I think it's going to be Hall and Gage for 5 and 6. I can't imagine Gage not making the roster. But, you know, I again, I'm sort of interested to see whether that's actually the case or whether I might be reading too much into, you know, some of Matt Ryan's comments about Hall earlier in the year. The other thing I think that I'm interested in, too, is just seeing if the Falcons are going into the season with Duke Riley as their unquestioned starter on the weak side, or if they might mix in, you know, the rookie there, Foye Oluokun. And even though Ridley has definitely been improving over the last couple of weeks for the most part, I think they're going to find a way to get him involved. I think that, you know, I don't think Riley can sort of rest on his laurels this year.
Yeah, I know what you meant, Dave. I have a difficult time typing those names now that the Falcons seem to be doubling up. You know, there's two Neils, there's two Grahams. I'm not a big fan of the Falcons roster decisions just from a pure spelling standpoint.
Oh, absolutely.
All the Smiths and whatnot, it's ridiculous. But, it's interesting because rewatching the game, I was a little disappointed with Riley's performance. I thought he regressed a little bit back to more what he looked like in the first game as opposed to the second game where he showed some improvement in some areas. But it does sort of raise the question a little bit further to me whether or not he's going to be entrenched as that starter. I do feel like in all likelihood he will, but I do think you're right in terms of finding ways to get Oluokun reps in those situations. I don't feel like it's going to be a permanent situation for Riley. It could be a situation where, like, if he comes out in week one and he's the starter and as the weak side linebacker in the base defense and doesn't have a good game, then week two against Carolina, we could see Oluokun in that role. And I certainly, part of my expectation is the Falcons may decide that they prefer going with 5 DBs and 3 safeties, a big nickel look, as opposed to, you know, sticking strictly to their typical base defense with 3 linebackers or mixing in some dime. We saw them do that, you know, rewatching the game. I noticed that they did do some dime on occasion. And it was somewhat effective. And so I do feel like because of the depth that they have in the secondary with the emergence of Casey, with the addition of Ron Parker and Brian Poole, you know, continuing to solidify that third cornerback spot, I feel like they can sort of get away with not necessarily having, you know, 3 good linebackers at this point or 3 linebackers that you can trust at this point and having 2 of those guys and then just basically putting a 3rd safety out there and having Keanu Neal basically function as your 3rd linebacker and having, you know, Casey or Parker, whoever, you know, back there in the back end with Allen. I think that's probably the best combination of 11 guys that you could probably get on the field at this point. And so, even though the linebacker position is, you know, somewhat sketchy, I feel pretty comfortable with the defense. Obviously, if injuries occur further down the road, then we'll have some, you know, questions at that point. But hopefully we have enough playmakers to sort of offset any issues there.
I hope so. And I think you're probably right because Casey to this point has been so impressive. I don't think you can really keep him off the field. And if it, you know, his playing time or Ron Parker's playing time or however you want to slice it up comes at the expense of Duke Riley, that's probably a good thing for the defense early on.
Yeah, we'll see what happens with that. We got more show to come, but the Locked On Podcast Network is expanding with college football shows, launching shows for Alabama, Arkansas, Kentucky, Tennessee in the SEC, Florida State in the ACC, Oklahoma and Baylor in the Big 12, Ohio State and Penn State in the Big 10, and Oregon in the Pac-12, with more to come. Find them wherever you get your podcasts, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Is there anything looking ahead to next week's Dolphins game? Obviously, we're expecting most of the starters to sort of take a back seat. There have been times in the past where Dan Quinn has decided to put Matt Ryan and Julio Jones out there for like 1 snap and then take them immediately out of the game. So, you know, I won't put it past Dan Quinn to do something weird like that again this week. But in terms of, we talked about some of the roster battles, but, you know, a guy like a Jonathan Celestine, is there some other guys that you're hoping next week can, that are on the rise, that can sort of solidify a roster spot that you have your eyes on?
Yeah, I think Celestine would be one that I'm absolutely interested to see if he can pull off a roster spot. A couple weeks ago, I would have said no. Now I'm at least, you know, open to the suggestion that he might. He's played really well, I think. You know, if I look at other guys that I'd be interested in seeing if they could push for one heading into the offseason, I had high hopes for Chris Lammons. I still think that he could potentially steal a practice squad, probably a roster spot's a little bit of a stretch, but I could see it happening. He's a talented kid. And I'm particularly interested, as I know you are, Aaron, in whether Sean Harlow is going to make the roster. To me, that's a very big question, because Harlow's a guy that I kind of liked when they drafted him a year ago. Obviously, he sat in mothballs, and they don't necessarily need him this year. But when I look ahead a year, and, you know, we might be looking at Andy Levitre not being here anymore, Ben Garland possibly being gone, it might be nice to have a young guard with some upside that's been in your system for a couple of years available to for a starting spot, or to be valuable depth, depending on what they decide to do with those positions. So I'm really hoping that they find a way to keep him around and don't lose him. But I know that, you know, we're talking about a roster crunch here, where there's only a handful of spots open and quite a few decent players competing for it.
Yeah, I think, you know, circling back to Celestine, I think he'll... Right now, I think if they're going to keep six linebackers, I would be hard-pressed to see them take somebody else over him, unless there's like some veteran that gets cut on the waiver wire that they're like, oh, we got to get this guy because of all the questions we have at Duke Riley. At this point, I don't necessarily see who that player is. And, you know, over the last couple of weeks, I've been trying to do my best to pay attention to other teams' 53-man roster projections to see if some veteran guy like that would get cut, and I haven't necessarily come across somebody that I thought makes sense. So I do feel like Celestine's in a good position to make the team. It's just going to be a matter of sort of like, do they feel they need to keep six linebackers? You know, that spot, I feel like they can go, you know, they don't necessarily need six, but if they do, I think he makes a lot of sense. As you say, for Harlow, yeah, I'm interested with what Harlow does, because it would baffle me to a certain extent, given, you know, he struggled in his first game a year ago in the preseason, but then was pretty solid over the next three games. I think he's been pretty solid over these last three games. By no means, no one's going to sit here and be like, Sean Harlow's playing at an all-pro level. But I think, you know, given, you know, he's been the best of the offensive linemen, the more consistent when he's been working with that third string unit, and I think has outplayed, you know, a guy like Jamil Douglas, it still baffles me why Douglas is working with the second unit. I can only, you know, speculate to that, to, you know, off-season work or whatever the case may be. But you mentioned it in terms of having a guy that's been in your system for a couple of years. And, you know, nowadays, given the practice habits and the limitations on practice, I think it's become especially harder to develop offensive linemen. And that's why we've seen guys like Wes Schweitzer and a number of offensive linemen dating back to the Mike Smith era that in their first year as starters have not been particularly good, and it takes time for them to develop. And I think to basically give up on a fourth round pick in Sean Harlow that has played reasonably well, you know, certainly no one's going to sit here and be like, oh, that guy's got a long-term future as, you know, the next Zach Martin or anything like that, but a guy that at the very least can be a competent backup, if not potentially down the line, a decent low-level starter. And to basically give up on that guy a year after drafting him in the fourth round just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, especially when some of the alternatives like an Austin Pastor or Jamil Douglas haven't necessarily played well. You know, you have a guy like Matt Gano, who I think definitely should be on the roster, but I don't necessarily know if he should be at the expense of a guy like Harlow, because I feel like similar to the situation we saw with Brian Hill. If you cut Harlow with the intention of putting him on the practice squad, at some point I'm pretty confident someone's going to scoop him up and put them on their roster, because I just don't think a fourth round pick on an offensive line position where teams need so many bodies at that position group is going to make it through the entire season on your practice squad. Well, I wouldn't necessarily guarantee that Matt Gano is going to do the same. I would think the odds are a little bit higher that an undrafted free agent might be able to make it. So if push came to shove, it would make more sense for my eyes to go with Harlow on the roster. If you want to keep both of those guys, I think there's a higher probability that you can with Gano on the practice squad. But I do feel like at this point that there is room for the Falcons to keep both on the roster and stash both of those guys. But we'll have to see sort of what happens over the next week or so. I think there always is one cut that sort of comes out of nowhere, and that's always, you know, hurts my heart as a person who, you know, who's so invested in these third string and fourth string roster battles. But we'll see what happens this year. Right now it may be Harlow, but it just would be weird to me that the Falcons would basically be giving up on a player because, again, I think if you cut him, someone's going to, even if he does initially clear waivers to land on your practice squad, eventually someone's going to come down the line and swipe him away from you. And I just feel like cutting him at this point would basically be gift wrapping him for another team to sign eventually.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Absolutely. And you know, it's not like there is, I'm searching for the right container or vessel here, but we'll say just a pot full of good guards out there in the NFL. So somebody like Harlow, who's reasonably athletic and has had some success in preseason, I don't see him lasting very long either. I mean, Brian Hill did get scooped up last year, and he was a running back, you know? So.
Yeah. Yeah. And from what I understand, is doing a pretty decent job in Cincinnati. So trying to think, anything else, Dave, that I think is worthy of discussion? Not anything off the top of my mind. Do you have anything else that you want to say before we get out of here?
Just that I am really ready for this season. And I think that, you know, we're going to have almost a couple weeks here to stew on what we just saw from the starters, on Saturday night. And I think that everybody should just relax and remember again, go back 2 years before and look at that Dolphins third preseason game, that 17-6 loss where the Falcons arguably looked even worse than they did last night against an inferior team. And remember that preseason doesn't matter really when you come down to it. And honestly, we were lucky to make it through preseason again without any major injuries.
Yes. And hopefully that continues in the next week. I always hate to see guys that are fighting for roster spots and fighting for practice squad spots to see them get injured and basically ruin those chances. Talking about the third preseason game, people bring up the 2016 season, which I think is obviously pertinent given what happened in the ensuing regular season and postseason. But it is a consistent trend, regardless of the season, that the third preseason game under Dan Quinn has been a pretty disappointing performance from the Falcons starters every single year. So I feel like this is just going to be a thing until the end of time, and then we'll get to these regular season games. And, you know, the fun thing about this year's regular season is we get to see the Falcons first among any NFL teams, and then we'll have a couple of extra days to stew on the result, either celebrating until, you know, like our, you know, like we just won the Super Bowl because we got our revenge, or, you know, stewing in our misery because of, you know, feelings. And, you know, as a Falcon fan, I'm all prepared for the stewing. That's just, you know, years and years of expectations have led me to, you know, understand that, you know, maybe the team doesn't always put their best foot forward in week one. You know, it all ends up working out in the long run. So I'm looking forward to whatever happens. I'm like you. I can't wait for the preseason to get over with.
It's close. It's real close. We just got to make it.
Yeah. Dave, let the people know where they can find you on Twitter and what you guys have going on at the Falcoholic in the coming days and weeks.
Yeah. So on Twitter, you can find me at @TheFalcoholic. We always have fun, talking about the games live together. It probably depends on how the games are going. But this week, we're going to be talking a lot about, you know, the last preseason game and what to expect from that. But we're also going to start thinking about, you know, who's getting cut. It happens every year, and it happens now, you know, after the fourth week of preseason. So it's a big, big purge of players. So we'll be taking some cracks at, you know, projecting who's actually going to make the team, who's going to make the practice squad. And then once it actually happens, we'll start breaking that down and give you our best idea of what the roster means and what surprises there are. I'm hoping the number of surprises will be pretty small.
Yeah, I think this year will be probably like that. So we'll see what happens. Dave, I appreciate you coming on. I'm sure I will be talking with you very shortly once the regular season kicks off. As I said at the top, you are the voice of reason, and it's not a coincidence that you happen to come on this podcast quite a bit after losses, because I feel like you need to be that sort of calming and that provide that perspective that is unique to people that have been covering this team for a decade plus that comes with it. But I will try my best to get you on at least one point this year after a win. We'll see what happens. Okay.
It can be a stressful win. I'll take that.
Okay. Well, they're all stressful wins. That's just
yes, they are.
appreciate it, Dave. And, you know, we'll see what happens. But thanks a lot, man.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right, man. Have a good day.
Take it easy.
That's it. Thanks. Dave, providing his insights, talking roster battles, talking various people fighting for roster spots. We'll find out what's going to happen in this upcoming last preseason game against the Dolphins. There'll certainly be, you know, primarily there'll be a couple of guys fighting for a handful of roster spots. A literal handful of roster spots, I think, are still up for grabs. But I think for the most part, it's going to be the last ditch effort for several guys to make a bid for the practice squad. I think several guys are sort of on the fence at this point. You know, you have guys like, you know, Chris Lammons or Ryan Neal, and how they perform in that final preseason game could determine which one of those guys lands on the practice squad and maybe which one of those guys gets cut. Maybe both of them, you know, land on the practice squad if they perform at a high enough level. But you still have the D-tackle battle between guys like Garrison Smith and Justin Zimmer and John Cunningham. Like, I would guess at this point that Garrison Smith will make the roster and Justin Zimmer will be on the practice squad. But maybe it's Justin Zimmer on the roster and John Cunningham on the practice, you know. Again, a lot of that will be determined by that final preseason game. Of course, the return specialist, not to go into all the things. We'll talk about that later in the week when we get to that Dolphins game. But, yeah, so that's it. And we'll be back, I don't know. Probably tomorrow what we'll do is I'll talk a little bit more in depth about the offensive line. And, you know, I touched upon this on Saturday's episode on the rapid reaction. And so I'll add a little bit more insight and sort of some interesting numbers. And we'll also do the iTunes reviews that I know I promised on this show. But we'll punt that till tomorrow's episode. So we'll be back tomorrow. Probably Wednesday we'll wind up doing our sort of final roster prediction before the final game. And we'll, you know, we'll break that down and you know, put something up on LockedOnFalcons.com. So if you haven't sent in an iTunes review, go ahead, send that in, 5 stars if you will, and certainly stay tuned to what's coming on LockedOnFalcons.com as well as this podcast in the coming week. And until then, guys.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.